I was particularly really, really excited when I saw the publication of the sex offenders in the papers yesterday. If for anything, I was very, very excited when I saw it, because I feel that it's the right way to go. We need to protect our children from these predators who are everywhere, who appears to be very nice, who appears to be, you know, but then they are predators. And at the end of the day, when they are prosecuted, or sometimes they don't even get to that level, and we still find them roaming the streets and still posing danger to, you know, unsuspecting women and children out there. But that's one thing. You mentioned something earlier before we open up the telephone lines to get some thoughts in. Let me drop this one. People have said that it's not enough to even secure conviction. There's a lot more to be done, because in this instance, we're looking at, you know, families that have been affected. In some cases, you have children. In some cases, you have the other partner who has been injured or maybe killed in the process. And then the man or the abuser is sent to prison. Then you're left with the kids. And I'm asking, is there a plan? Is that part of the functions of your team to see to the welfare of the children?
Definitely. So we look at this from a holistic lens. In fact, access to justice is just one of the components, one of the pillars in our response mechanisms. We are survivor-centered. Our focus is on the survivor, ensuring that the survivor, if it's a case of sexual violence, for instance, ensuring that the survivor is able to access medical support. Because, of course, sexual violence, there are diseases, you know, HIV can be passed, the person can become, she can become pregnant, and all of that. So medical attention, we place premium on ensuring they are able, the survivor is able to access quick professional medical attention. Mm-hmm. Then there's psychosocial support. Psychosocial support is counseling. When a person has gone through trauma, there's a need for them to receive therapy. And so that service is also provided for. And then we now look at empowerment. I think that's what you're speaking about. Empowerment in a holistic, with a holistic approach. Empowerment is not limited to money, finances. Mm. Empowerment can be skills acquisition. Empowerment can be relocation. You know, we've had calls to relocate families as a result of sexual violence because the community got to know about it. And let's say the child in this question, you know, she's walking on the road and people are pointing, oh, that is her, her life has spoiled and all of that. We've had calls to actually relocate families. We've had calls to change schools because perhaps it happened in the school. Mm. And, you know, this child does not want to go back to that school because she has become a source of ridicule. Mm. So these are the empowerment support systems that government has put in place for these survivors. So once they report, yes, we're working towards justice. Yes, we're working towards ensuring convictions. But our larger focus remains on the survivor.
Mm. Do we, talking about the survival, there's an aspect of my question, which is a welfare system in the case where the father, the mother, no more there because of this particular situation. Is there a welfare system from, you know, within the state government to take care of children who, you know?
Of course. We have the Ministry of Youth and Social Development. That ministry is devoted to issues, all issues that pertain to children. So in a case, perhaps let's give an example.
Yeah.
In a case of domestic violence, the man allegedly kills the woman. The woman is late. The man is sent to jail. What happens to the three children that they left behind? Mm. Government takes in those children. We apply, we get a protection order. We take in those children. We keep them, ensure that their lives go on. Or we may act, government now assesses, because we don't want to overly institutionalize children. Children have a right to grow up in a family setting. Mm-hmm. It's keeping with the child's rights law. So part of the assessment is, okay, is there any trusted family member that these children can be placed with, and as much as possible, keep them together so that it's not like as if a child is here, a child is there. Mm-hmm. You know, let them still grow up as siblings. So there are social services, welfare programs in place, state-driven, are in place to respond to those issues if they do arise.
Indeed. Lagos, if you are just joining us, you're welcome. We're talking about domestic and sexual violence on the show this morning. And I have with me on the show, in case you're watching online, you would have seen her already. She is Mrs. Mtitilayo Vivo Adeni, Executive Secretary of the Lagos State Domestic and Sexual Violence Agency, the SVRT. And we've been having conversation, really, about domestic violence in this state. Let me come to you and get your thought on our conversation thus far. Mrs. Vivo Adeni, when we return from the break, I want us to talk about, you know, the different groups that you work with. I know you work with NGO that you mentioned earlier. I know you work with the judiciary and some other groups, some other partners. But one partner stands out, and that is the police. I'd like to get your thoughts on some areas in your working, your relationship with the police. But let's go to the telephone lines. We want to take one or two calls. 0700-993-993-993 and 01465-7190. Those are the second line is for female callers only. So please call in. If you want to be anonymous, you're very, very free to be anonymous. We welcome that. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, it's very good to hear that the sex offenders release was published. But isn't it possible to have it on a site where it can always be referred to? I mean, we employ different people, including men and women, and some of them are actually sex offenders that have been, that have even served their terms. I don't know. But still have that character. Even their website you can go to. Like that would just be great. Okay,
yeah.
Before I employ this guy, let me check.
Yeah.
So that I don't know.
That's apt. Let's take one more question, then I'll come to you. Good morning to you. Yes, please. Good morning.
Is this Nigeria Info?
Yes, you're live on the radio, Nigeria Info.
Yeah, I want to remain anonymous.
That's okay.
Now, when sexual violence or domestic violence is being perpetrated, and a family wants to.
Hello? Oh, that call dropped. Apologies. It's no more on my screen here. Apologies for that. I don't know what happened. Mr. Vivadini, let's talk about the database website, dedicated website that Nisha Caller mentioned.
Yes, definitely. You know, the essence, one of the reasons why we have the sex offenders register is to cater to background checks. So for intending employers, or rather employers that intend to recruit the services of employees, it's important for them to conduct background checks. So if you have perhaps you run a child-centered institution, or you're a private individual, you want to recruit the services of a driver, a cleaner, whatever.
Yeah.
And you want to ascertain whether or not this person has been convicted of an SGBV-related case. You are encouraged to apply, and it's a very straightforward process. You just send an email. I can share the details with you. You just send an email. This is the person you want to recruit. Yeah. Give us details, and we run a check to see if this person is on the sex offenders register. Okay. And then we notify you. It's actually on the Ministry of Justice website and on DSV's website.
Okay.
If you click on it, there's a column there, sex offenders register, you can check.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. I like the sound of that. 2001, I think. No, not 2021. Yes, 2021. The DSVRT was transformed into DSVA, a full-blown agency. How has that helped your operations?
Where do I start from? So for instance, we moved from a two-room porter cabin to now a three-story building.
Wow.
For 15 officers to strength is over 90 officers.
Wow.
In our one location, we're able to provide free legal, medical, psychosocial, empowerment, ADR services. We now have police attached to the agency. You know, so we've literally leapfrogged, and the progress has been amazing. And I mean, this is truly a testament of political will. You know, we are truly putting our money where our heart is. And because the governor knows, Mr. Governor Babajide Sanwo-Olu knows that this is an issue that concerns each and every one of us. And so we must continue to support the efforts of our response and preventing sexual and gender-based violence. So the progress has been amazing. It's so beautiful to watch. Something that started up from an interministerial committee metamorphosed into a statutory agency. And, you know, we should put it out that this is an initiative that has been replicated in various states, including the FCT. So it's amazing, and it's such a humbling experience and something to be proud of.
We've heard also from some of the NGOs, for instance, the last time we had this conversation here in the studio, majority of my guests agreed that it wasn't easy dealing with the police when you talk about, sexual and domestic violence. And I'm wondering, you work with the police as an agency of government. What was it like? Have you received any complaint yet?
Of course. I don't think there's any institution that is perfect, that is delivering their services perfectly. I think we're all aspiring towards perfection. And perhaps the reason why the police gets a lot of bashing is because typically they are the first port of call, right? So most people, as soon as it happens, go to the police station. And so the response, that first initial response, goes a long way in determining whether or not the survivor will proceed or would say, I leave it to God. God is the ultimate judge. And so, yes, we do have feedback from our clients. You know, we also get feedback from the police because, you know, it's a two-way traffic. The police is ready to investigate. And then the survivor comes and says, the family has spoken to me. Let sleeping dogs lie, you know, just let him or her sign an undertaking. Don't take the person to court. But you don't hear that. What you hear most times is, the police is not doing the needful. But the police also, let me just issue a caveat. I'm not a police officer. I'm sure that the PPI will do better in this regard. But today we have calls to engage the police. I speak to at least one or two DPOs on a daily basis because it is a relationship. We are in a symbiotic relationship with the police. I always say that, you know, cases are not won in court. Cases are won at investigation stage. And so if we get it right at the police level, every other person is just building on the well-established foundation that has been set. So are there issues with the police? Definitely. Are there issues with other responder agencies? Definitely. But we are it's a work in progress. And we have to keep on engaging, working towards that common good, knowing fully well that we're only as strong as our weakest link.
Good. We're going to head to the telephone, but I need to ask this question because it's time for us to face one of the biggest issues that, that's why we're here. I want you to address victims of sexual or domestic violence, old or young, male or female. How do they begin to, I don't want to say report, but how do they begin their exit strategy? What should they do? What can they do? I mean, they're still with the abuser, but how do they start? Because I figure a lot of people don't know this, because why I'm asking this question is, you said, you know, cases are not won in court. They are won during, you know, so how do people start putting together evidence? How do people start, you know, planning their exit strategy? Where do they start from?
Thank you. So this is as it pertains to domestic violence.
Right.
First of all, if you are a survivor listening, thank you very much for listening. We appreciate you. We just want you to know that it's not your fault. You are not to blame. The second point we would like you to know is that you do not deserve this. You deserve much better. The third point we would like you to know is that there are support services that exist for you to take advantage of. When we're talking about bringing hope, when we're talking about assisting survivors, we would like you to know that there are different doors that you can access to get help. It is not only the police, court, jail. There are other doors that can be explored. For instance, there's a door of alternative dispute resolution. There's a door of going to court if you want to be separated. Be informed so that you can take an informed decision. One of the greatest powers that an abuser has over the survivor is the ability to make a choice. One of the things we do at DSVA is to give you back that power of choice. And that is why we don't tell you what to do. That's not our job. We don't advise. We counsel you on the different options that exist, and we help you to take a decision so you own it and run with it. So if you are listening, if you are experiencing abuse, you don't even know the first step, you don't know what to do, please reach out. You can speak to us. We have on our toll-free line, we have Gallant social workers ready to assist 24/7, 0800-333-333. Just call in, even if you just want to pour your mind out. And then we get you in touch with a counselor so that you are able to process what you are going through and then help you on your road to healing. If it has happened and you have taken a decision that you want to leave, it's important that you build your case. There should be evidence. It's unfortunate that a good number of our cases, when it comes to domestic violence, there's no real evidence. There are no pictures. There's no medical report. There's no police report. You say the neighbor heard you screaming. When we engage the neighbor says, I don't want to be part of it. But if you are getting ready to leave that abusive relationship, it's important that you build the case. If you go to the hospital, please tell the doctor what happened. Please do not say you hit your head. Confide in the doctor. This is what happened. And it's going to be documented. If you sustain injuries, please take pictures. Send to family friends or family members. So just in case your own phone is destroyed, at least backup, right? And then you can talk to a counselor. What you discuss with the counselor can be reduced into writing, and it can come, it can serve as evidence. But the most important thing is, please do not remain in that abusive relationship, because every domestic violence case is a potential murder case. It can be the last push, the last shove, the last kick. Please do not wait until it's too late. Please reach out.
Fantastic. Could you please repeat the number again? 08000?
0800-333-333.
All right. Let's go to the telephone line now. Remember, you can remain anonymous if you want to be anonymous. We'll just take a few calls. Good morning to you.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, miss. Good morning to you.
This is Pastor Lad calling from Orilego.
Let's talk.
Okay. I think I want to ask. I know they are trying, but I want to ask your guest. Are they taking some of the advocacies to religious houses? Because they find out that in some case where these things happen, they bring in religious leaders to pacify the people, not to take further steps. So are they taking some of their campaigns to religious houses?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you too. Yes, ma'am, please go on. Go on.
Thank you so much, Pastor.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
You know, the religious clerics prevent him. Hello, can you hear me, sir?
Yeah, we can hear you now, ma'am.
Okay. I said the religious institutions, the religious clerics play a very pivotal role if we're going to win this war against sexual and gender-based violence. Because they are people of influence. They know how to influence members of their congregation. And so we don't look at religious clerics from an antagonistic perspective. We are conscripting them because we know the influence they wield.
You are bringing them in. You're working with them.
We are bringing them. So just last year, we launched our flagship program with religious clerics.
Right.
The aim is to introduce compulsory premarital counseling for
We've lost the connection again. We've lost the connection again.
Am I back?
Yes, you're back now. You're back now.
So we've launched this at the marriage registries. But we know that there are some people that would not go to the marriage registries. They will go to the church. They will go to the mosque. So to get, you know, to solemnize their union. And so during that point, aside from the normal religious counseling that will be administered, it's important for the churches, the mosques, to introduce this compulsory premarital counseling,
right?
Because there are red flags that can be detected at that point. We know it. A good number of survivors will tell you they saw the signs. They saw the anger issues. They saw the jealousy, the overpossessiveness, but you know, they still went in. So at that point in time, if there's this premarital counseling that is compulsory, that intended couples have to take, it is a way of identifying these red flags and managing them if possible, or, you know, recommending separation or further counseling. So yes, we do engage religious clerics. We've been doing those ad hoc engagements, but since last year, we've developed a program targeted at institutionalizing this message into the churches and the mosques.
All right. Let's take an anonymous caller.
Hello. Good morning, Sasheri.
Good morning, Anonymous.
Sorry, I want to remain anonymous.
That's okay.
Let's talk about this, the topic of domestic violence.
Right.
Do you know why? Okay. I grew up in a barracks. My brother was a police, a senior police officer. I grew up in a barracks. Why police could not do their job? When you go to the barracks, like, I grew up in highway patrol barracks. I refused to join the force because of the attitude I saw in the barracks, in the policemen. So all these domestic violence, that is why you see that policemen cannot do their job, because men in the barracks is where everything happens. You beat your wife, naked your wife, and throw him outside the daytime. Mm. You see a policeman rape another policeman child, the case we close, all those things. Abusing your wife outside, your daughter, all those things. Beat your daughter naked. There are a lot of things going in the barracks. If the governor, Sanwo-Olu, we send people in the barracks, and witness what is going on there, then they will now come back and sit down and think about how they are going to fix all these things. You will see that all this report, police don't do this, police did this, everything will come to an end. That is what I can contribute.
Thank you.
And that is the reason why I did not join the force. I have the full right, the access to join the force. The way they behave, I don't like it.
Okay.
So I don't want to involve myself in anything.
All right. All right. So thank you.
That is the truth about it.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Anonymous. Appreciate it. Let's quickly take Joy. After Joy, I'll come to you, madam. Good morning to you, Joy.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. You see, what I want to say is what that my sister just explained. My own was Ojo Councilman. See, those people, that is what they do with their wife and their children, most of them. That is why you see them. They cannot do anything about those things. Thank you.
Thank you, Joy. Thank you. Mrs. Vivadini, here we go again, because I was going to ask you initially about whether you train the officers on gender desk and what are your challenges, you know, from that point on.
Definitely. And thank you very much to Anonymous and Joy. I think we are all a product of our socialization. But we witness how the values that are inculcated in us, the attributes, we are all a product of our socialization. And the truth is, you cannot give what you do not have. If we are brought up in an environment that encourages violence, of course, it's going to be very difficult for you to preach against what you have been accustomed to, isn't it? And so, today we're talking about the police, we're talking about the army. This is not peculiar to just these law enforcement agencies. It's everywhere. This domestic violence, sexual violence has eaten deep into the very fabric of our society. There is no strata that is immune from this menace. And so when it comes to police response, you know, let me use this opportunity to say this. We look since 2012, before DSVRT was even established, I believe 2012, 2013, the Justice for All program on the British Council partnered with the Nigerian police in establishing designated gender-based violence desks. And they are referred to as family support units. So when we came on in 2014, we had three of these units located in Adeniji Adeli, Isokoku, and Ilupeju. Now, this is in keeping with global best practices. All around the world, if you look at societies that have, you know, put in effort to eradicate this menace, you have designated police stations, you have designated health facilities, you have designated courts to adjudicate on issues of sexual and gender-based violence. Mm-hmm. So what we did when we came on is to scale up the establishment of the FSUs, the family support units. From three, we've taken them to 22. Of course, if you look at the entire metropolis, we have over 200 divisions, police divisions, and we just have 22. Our goal is to have these units in each of the divisions. But the message is this. Please, if it does happen, report to the designated family support unit closest to you. I will share the details with you, sir. Because in those designated or at those designated units, you have trained personnel. Trained personnel seized with the mandate of investigating, opening up the referral pathway. As the case is reported, there is a referral pathway that must be opened up for survivors. Referrals must be made. The police cannot provide you shelter. The police cannot provide medical attention. There are institutions that are set up to do that. And then, of course, conduct detailed investigation. Put the survivor at the scene of the crime. You know, we said it earlier on that investigation is critical. It's the bedrock if we are going to ensure convictions.
Right.
And so the idea is, please go to the designated family support unit, designated police station to you. And if you have issues, please don't say you give up. Escalate. You can escalate either to the area commander, or you can escalate to the gender desk department of the commissioner of police. You can even escalate to DSVA because it's a partnership. We work with the police to ensure that this system must work and survivors must access justice.
Indeed. Let's talk about survivors quickly. My time, I don't know where it's going. It's not stopping at all. I want us to talk about survivors now, because a lot of people really may not even get the scope of this conversation. People think it's just between husband and wife. How about house helps? How about even children, adults, children, or maybe young adults, children, in this case, in any case, who can make formal reports?
Anybody can make formal reports. We get reports from children when we go to schools and we engage children. We give them the toll-free line. They call. We have parents call saying, my child just came back and gave me this book and we saw this number, we wanted to call. My child is saying, I have rights, don't... It's good. It means that we are sowing those seeds.
Yeah.
You know, we have in Lagos the policy of mandated reporting, where we encourage mandated reporters, good Samaritans, busybodies. We encourage busybodies. If you see something, please say something and do something. So they actually call and say, oh, this is happening in my environment. I want to remain anonymous. This is where it's happening. This is it. This is that. Come and rescue or come and investigate and all of that. So, and as government, we work based on intelligence, based on information, and we don't have to disclose who told us or who gave us that information.
Right.
So we get our information from different sources. It can be directly. It can be. We've had parents reporting their son-in-laws of being abused towards their daughters. Yes.
Nice.
We've even had parents accompany their daughter-in-law reporting their son. You know, so
the point,
you can report and you can report anonymously. What we just crave from you is please give us all the required information so that we don't keep calling you and, you know, constituting ourselves as a nuisance. Just if it's happening, if it's a case of child abuse, let us know closest bus stop, the flat number. Just give us enough information to work with.
Mrs. Isaiah Viva Adeni, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. But before we go, could you share that number again, that toll-free line again, as we go this morning?
Thank you so much. 0800-333-333. 0800-333-333. We're also on social media at Lagos DSVA, I think, and Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And then, of course, we're located in CBD Access, Central Business District.
Right. Mrs. Silayo Viva Adeni is Executive Secretary of the Lagos State Domestic and Sexual Violence Agency, DSVA. She is also the coordinator of the Lagos State Domestic and Sexual Violence Response Team, DSVRT. Ma'am, thank you so much for giving us your time this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's our show today, Lagos. Tomorrow is Health Thursday, so we'll start as early as 5. Bye-bye for now. I'm Sheriff Quadri.